Welcome to Unrehearsed. I am your host, Joanna Basil. Jan and I, we have known each other for almost 4 years now, I think, here in Nashville. I refer to him, so I'm told, as the mayor of Nashville. I didn't even realize I was the one that called you that initially to Charlie, but apparently I was.
It's a big responsibility. It's an honor and a privilege to even have that designation.
Well, yeah. The reason why is because, A, I see you everywhere I go, or I did for a while there pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. That's changed some. And also because everyone I know, I'm like once removed from you. We have a ton of mutual friends, and I think that's the case for you and I, for Dr. Charlie and I, for you and Dr. Charlie, right?
I think the whole world is one degree of separation if you look hard enough. So the more people that you know, there's more people for you to meet. And then finding those connections that intertwine you makes the story of life that much better. Nashville's a pretty small town when all said and done, especially in the music industry. And if you're anywhere for a decade, hopefully you've gotten to meet quite a few of the people that, you know, make the city what it is.
Right. And I met you through Maria and Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
Not Donnie and Marie, but Maria and Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
And Donnie's a real local, true native of Nashville, musician as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know that you were in a band. I just learned that recently.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, through Donnie, got to meet Maria. Maria got to meet you, and then you got to meet me through Maria. And it's, again, the connections.
How did you avoid the band piece? I just gave you an in to talk about the band.
Yeah, I met Donnie through Raylan Baxter. If you want to talk about the genealogy of how we became friends, that was through my old band, Soul Cat. And we put on a thing called Critteroo, which shout out to Critter out in Austin, formerly of Nashville, one of the best guys I know out there. We put together a wonderful party at Mercy Lounge back in the day, and a bunch of different bands. Raylan played. And before that, Raylan was just a friend of the scene. He had his own band. I was in my own band. And again, all the different bands were so interconnected. It was like, it was somewhat incestuous. Like everybody played in a band with each other. It's like, oh, there's a side project for this side project. And got to meet Donnie through Raylan, and fantastic drummer. Come on, Donnie, let's make some music together.
Right? He's got a home studio too.
He does.
So speaking of home studios, see, I really didn't introduce you. You're a musician and a friend and, quote, mayor of Nashville. And now you have this persona as Jan's House. You have this new venture that you started. I say new. It's been around how long?
I guess the name. I mean, I've owned the house since 2013, but I guess the name. I tried to come up with a good name for it, you know, like something that's very savvy, you know, business oriented, sounds professional. But Daryl from, you know, Hall & Oates, right?
One of my favorite TV shows.
Awesome.
Daryl's house.
He just did Daryl's house. It's like, yeah, cool. You get to stay at his house. And I don't know, not to be pretentious or anything, but it's like, yeah, you're staying at my house. You know, just come hang out. You know, a place to, you know, write, rest, rehearse, record, let a band, you know, have a home away from home in Nashville when they're touring through to perform.
So how long have you used it as a, what we'll call a musician's hostel?
Yeah. After I stopped touring with Raylan, trying to bide my time, play music, record, and try to find other ways to utilize the space because most of the band moved out and it was a little vacant, but I wanted to bring the tour to me. So saw it as a way to, you know, still be a part of the music industry and you know, not necessarily have to go on tour, but get to still be a part of, you know, the tour circuits and play somewhat of an integral part of you know, of their stay in Nashville, you know. And when you provide musicians with you know, the simple amenities, I guess the basics, place to you know, shower, shave, having a bed is a trump card on tour. To have a bed is like the holy grail. You know, you're not sleeping on floors that smell of pine sol. You don't have to sleep on couches, you know, and covered in dog hair. Granted, you know, I love dogs. Dog hair is tight. You know, you collect enough of it, you can turn into a pillow.
People have this misconception that being a musician, especially when you're getting started, that it's this glamorous existence. But I know a lot of guys that that have done actually pretty well are still in a van and still crash or, you know, have real simple hotel stays.
Yeah. And I think that's on a band by band basis. I'm assuming most, if not all bands want to achieve that level of success. It's like, oh, you got the bus, you got the planes, you know, it's like rock and roll bands that think, you know, of today, think that's going to be like, yeah, we're the next Led Zeppelin. We're going to have our own airplanes. Like that doesn't really exist. I guess there's, I don't know what you qualify as your level of success. You know, some bands are truly happy sleeping on floors and, you know, couches and traveling in a van that might smell of piss and patchouli with eight other individuals. And that's their lifestyle. They live for it. You know, to be an artist, you know, you live and breathe for it. And some, you know, to be an artist is to be an entrepreneur. And most artists invest all their time, resources, you know, energy, et cetera, into themselves, you know, in hopes of getting something out of it for themselves or being able to give, you know, to the people, you know, writing the perfect song that's just for themselves. But, you know, once you put something out in an artistic sense, it doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to the public, you know, and they create their own experiences from the songs they listen to, how they perceive the artwork that's on the wall. But most artists, and I think David Byrne talked about it, it's like how music works, the type of music that you write, based on the style of music, but also the rooms that you play in. If you're playing in smaller rooms like CBGB or what, Here at the End, Dark Matter and such, there's a lot more energy. There's kind of an uncomfortable aspect about the room of how, you know, it could be hot, you know, a hot summer day with 100, 200 people in that room and the energy, you know, you really get to connect with the fans. And as you get larger, certain bands, you know, you go to play in arenas, you're playing not just for your, you know, I guess, group of people, you're getting, I guess, pop culture, the popular aspect. You want to write music that all people will enjoy. I don't know. It's a lot of the biggest rock bands that I've got to see them when they start out small. And then, you know, progression of what their music sounded like from, you know, their first EP to what they are now is drastically different.
Right.
In a way you can kind of hear the sonic journey of what, you know, who they were and what they have become and what they will become. You know, do you know a lot of bands or listen to a lot of bands that have maintained, you know, every record that they've been putting out is just absolutely fantastic, like better than the last one? Or is there a certain plateau that you see?
When I look at the progression of a band as a true fan, say some that I started out with day one, and I look at the progression from album to album or tour to tour, and you're not always going to like every single album because it's an artistic journey and they might change the players. And I don't know about you, but sometimes they put in a new drummer and you get pissed off, almost like what happened with the Cubs recently. I get angry, like, don't change it up. I like it the way it is. But that's part of the artistic journey or experience for the band or, you know, the band leader. The original guy, the original guys, they get to make those decisions and each album is going to be different as they progress, right? Add different players, add different sounds, or just evolve musically or artistically. And sometimes the fans don't always like it, but if you're a true fan, you stay open-minded. I found that if I go see somebody live, I'm more receptive to the recorded music. Is sometimes when someone's doing it live, that's the way they intended it. At least most of the bands that I listen to, I would say that that's what it is. Although, you know, I mean, we both know artists and bands that the recorded piece is just as important, if not more important. But the live show, there's just something different about it.
Oh, if I see a live show, I hope the live show is better than the record.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the best thing is like, can it translate? And there's some artists that just cannot pull it off, you know, whether it's overproduced or just how many different instruments are in something. If you want to get a certain band, it might require, you know, 18 people on stage to be able to replicate a certain song, you know, like that. And I have a lot of respect for like what Antibalas or Preservation Hall, like the jazz club down in like big bands, you know, and for guys to get into vans like that and like it gets crowded real quick.
Well, I was going to dedicate this episode to my friend Bjorn Thorsrud. We recently lost him last week, actually, and he was a recording engineer and did front of house for the Pumpkins for many years. And that's how he and I met. I used to run with that crowd. And then later on, probably unbeknownst to Billy at this point, I did digital management for one of the album releases. And so we stayed connected. And over the years, we lost a little bit of touch. But, you know, so I went down the Smashing Pumpkins hole this week and I pulled out the vinyl and the re-releases, which I even forgot. Like, I actually typed out the liner notes for the re-releases. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot I did that. But yeah, he had an integral part of that too. And listening to all those albums, and then it would think it was like the anniversary of the release of Melancholy and Infinite Sadness, I started to read and go down a YouTube hole about Flood and his part in that. And I think what Billy says was, he was quoted as, and I'm paraphrasing here, saying that Flood told them to be as dark as they wanted to, like, be your true dark selves. And I want to hear that. He said he turned the amps up all the way, like during recording, and they played as if they were on stage and captured it on the recording. And once I heard that, I had never heard that before. So I listened to it the other day all the way through with that in mind. It's a different perspective, right? So they were like leaving. So I think you would know how this is. You, when you go on stage, you wanna leave everything on the stage, right? So could you imagine recording that way?
Oh, you got to give it your all. Yeah.
Right?
I think that's the differentiation with technology today. I mean, excuse me, a lot of bands back in the day, they had to play loud. They didn't have options. It's just like, go for it. You know, and live shows, I feel like a lot of bands aren't using bigger amps anymore. They don't have to as much, but there's something about it, having that raw power going to a show and you feel it in your body or, you know, your ears. Hopefully, you know, I went to see My Bloody Valentine two nights in a row at the Honda Civic Center in LA and didn't bring earplugs the first night.
And you definitely brought them the second night.
I brought them the second night, but I definitely had ringing for about a week and a half in my ears. That was sonically one of the loudest shows ever recorded.
Did you see Failure at the Basement East?
I did not, no.
So their whole setup is, I don't even think they have, I forget what their setup is, but it's unique and different, and yet it sounded so great. I mean, they're kind of like a musician's band or a recording engineer's band. Like people, I was probably, and this speaks to the way it is out there. Like 2 to 3% of engineers are women, right? Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah. That may have changed in the last year, but I think as of last year, it was reported only 2 to 3% of recording engineers out there are women. But I'll tell you, I walked in that room to see Failure. Also Guided by Voices, right? Another band. You walk in a room
great
like
band.
Basement East, and I'm one of a handful of women. It's like dudes in bands.
I feel like a lot of metal shows are that way too, or prog, you know, certain genres kind of cater to older men with long hair.
I just remembered something Bjorn told me once. He told me that he loved going to, what was your favorite show to go to or favorite show to work? I forget what the conversation went, but he was like, dude, Loverboy. What? He was like, Def Leppard. He's like, do you ever see the chicks at those shows? He's like, and then look at the Smashing Pumpkins crowd, right? Totally different. I'll never forget that. I was like, Loverboy? I mean, respectable. I'll go play Loverboy after this and love it. But, you know, in contrast, a Loverboy show versus going to see Smashing Pumpkins, the crowd difference. So that made me laugh.
I don't know. Certain genres cater to a certain, you know, is it more catered towards men or women, would you say? Like, I don't know. If you go to a Harry Styles show, for example, what
percentage? Younger women, I would think.
Yeah. Or boy bands, Backstreet Boys. Like,
I was an NSYNC girl, I think. I was a little too old for that, but yeah. And it's funny, I was just telling someone this, Coldplay. I'm like, yeah, it's like screaming 14-year-olds and women from Orange County drinking white wine.
Yeah. they have the largest age demographic and med to like, don't, I could get behind some Coldplay.
Stop
it. I'll shamefully, production wise, when you have a multi-million dollar budget.
I saw them at the Belasco, which, you know, there's this movement in LA where they refurbing old theaters, right? And there's the theater district in most cities. And so the Belasco Theater is gorgeous. It was beautiful and it sounded great. And then I got to see Coldplay and I was spoiled. I was affiliated with Live Nation and I got to be put in the box and I look and there's Apple, their children, Apple and Momo, and Apple stepping on my shoes. It was really funny, actually. And then there's Coldplay and the production was amazing, even in that small of a room, right? But yet it's just, it doesn't grab me.
Doesn't really grab me either, but I respect them. I mean, there's...
No, I'm not.
It's sonically, there's some good stuff, but, you know, again, Radiohead is, it's like, they, you could hear
Thank
how they
you.
Were trying very hard to yeah, be
Thank
Radiohead.
Well, I was just listening to an Iggy Pop song, and it was the sessions that they did in the desert with...
Oh, with Josh, yeah.
Josh
with
Homme.
Queens of the Stone Age guys.
Yes.
Yeah, that whole group.
And I heard the one song, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's trying to be Bowie, but...
Bowie and him were friends.
Bowie and him, like, came up together, so that makes sense.
They were best friends.
So, I mean, who got what from who? So I can't say. Only Iggy would know that.
Good artists imitate, great artists steal.
What's his real name?
Iggy Pop?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
I've even thought about that. It doesn't matter. So one of the things that I wanted to bring up... I've been told that you do voices, that you have like, and the reason why it's interesting is because I've had Craig Gass, who is like the master of voices as far as comedians go. So when I was told that you do voices, they're like, you got to ask him about that. What is that? What's that about?
I don't know. It was always fun to kind of imitate. I used to do a lot of prank calls as a kid.
Me too.
And or calling into school and pretending to be somebody else or my dad or some family member. It's like, oh, Jan's sick. Jan can't go in today. But then taking it a step further and just like listening to friends or being on an airplane travel. My parents split when I was really young. And I started flying by myself when I was around 6 or 7. And every time, you know, you get on the plane, you're exposed to, it's random. It's a lotto of, you know, lotto of who you're going to sit next to. But just hearing voices and trying to replicate it. Granted, trying to sound like an old man when you're 7 is pretty difficult, but getting over and like even cartoon characters and stuff too, watching like Beavis and Butthead or Ren and Stimpy, characters of that nature, you know, where cartoons you can, it's just imagination taken to a whole new degree that, you know, kids get to watch. And a lot of the shows I got to watch as a kid were pretty dark. You know, Ren and Stimpy is a dark show. Courage the Cowardly Dog is a dark show. Beavis and Butthead were fun, idiotic, but still, I mean, Mike Judge his shows are canon.
I forget there's an age difference because you're like, oh, I watched this when I was a kid and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, for reference, I'm 31. So.
Right, I know. And so when you're talking about dark TV shows, immediately I thought of the stuff that I listened or watched when I was a kid and it's Fantasy Island.
Oh.
That sort of thing. And then it was, well, it was Dance Fever and that sort of thing. And then it would go into Fantasy Island. Mm-hmm. And then, and I don't know why my dad was letting me watch TV up in the room by myself. It was his room, a big old bed. And I was watching Benny Hill, which that's kind of racy humor. And I think that's where I get my sense of humor from, is from that dry British humor.
Yeah.
Right. And it was a little racy. So, you know, hey guys, that explains a lot. Okay. Dance Fever, Fantasy Island, and Benny Hill. But then afterwards it was Cinesex. Remember Cinemax? Well, see, again, you were see? You don't even know the reference.
See?
When I say Cinesex, certain people know exactly what I'm talking about.
It was like Skinemax.
Yeah, is that what I'm supposed to be calling it?
Cinesex,
I always call things different.
HBO had real sex.
I do it all wrong. No, it was before that. Skinamax, is that what you're calling it?
Yeah,
it was like basically soft porn late at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I was, that explains everything.
Taxi Cab Confessions.
Yeah, but that was later on for me. That was later on for me. And those shows were kind of, they were very racy.
Yeah. My parents let me watch whatever I want as a kid. And, you know, when I was, what was it, Beavis and Butthead, it was what, mid-90s? I would go to school, I was like, TV for everyone. Are you defending me? And the teachers all thought that I was just an ADD riddled child. It had talks with my parents. Like, is it like,
should we medicate him?
Yeah, like, where is that coming from? And then, you know, my dad put tune in and it's like, oh, you know, like, oh, that's Beavis and Butthead. That's Beavis. You know, it's a funny show. And it's like, I don't know, if a kid watches adult shows, does the kid mature faster if they're exposed to humor or concepts? Maybe kids can't even comprehend it. Like, there was an episode of South Park where it's like, Eric Cartman wants to be a lesbian. And they say that the way that you do that is by eating carpet. And literally, the kids are eating carpet in class, and it's like, okay, over your head as a kid, but, you know, as an adult, like, wow, that's interesting that, you know, kid.
Well, from what I understand, there's also lots of sexual innuendos stuck in Disney movies that we don't see, especially
and people
the illustrated ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, is the castle in, Under the Sea, what is it, Emerald? Is it what the...
Under the Sea.
I'm blanking.
Little Mermaid?
Little Mermaid. Jesus.
Okay.
Yeah. The castle is a penis.
I'll have to go back and watch it.
I'll have to look into it. But yeah, if there's some dark undertones with Disney and all, and there's a lot of, you know.
Animaniacs. That was the one. I swear to God, it was for stoners.
Oh, of course it was. But I mean, yeah. That was a kid show. And then a lot of those kid shows ended up being what became Adult Swim, too.
Yes.
On Cartoon Network.
Yep.
You know, as home movies, you know, Coach McGurk. That's
Elizabeth
a great voice
was doing
do.
A voice on Squidbillies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Elizabeth Cook.
Hey, Brendan. That's my Coach McGurk. That's the best one I can do. It's not different, too much different from this voice, but was it John Benjamin or John H. Benjamin?
You're asking the wrong person.
Check him out. He did a record, a jazz record in which that he got a full, you know, set up full team, best jazz musicians that a comedian can buy, and got him in the room playing the music. And he goes up and sits down right next to that piano and doesn't know how to play jazz. And there's a whole documentary about how he did the record. And it's beautiful. It's one of the
but
most...
But he knew how to play piano?
No, not at all.
Oh, wow.
He wanted to do jazz record and didn't know how to do it at all.
That would be me. Any record.
It's kind of like a Spinal Tap, you know, kind of thing that just... that.
And this is a documentary?
Yeah, there's a documentary and the record too, yeah. Maybe we can play that as the interlude, you know.
Well, you know, I was thinking we were going to play some Soul Cat.
Oof.
That's...
We could talk about that for a second. If you could find, yes, you're more than welcome to. But
dude,
I
already found it on Spotify.
You found the first record, the very first one. So Uno is not the first record. There was a couple before that.
Like it Welcome wasn't to Uno.
Welcome to Cowabunga, or is it the self-titled EP?
It might be self-titled.
Wow, if that's still on.
No, you know what? No, don't take it off. Because listen, I make playlists that correspond to the podcast. So when we talk mm-hmm. about something, people can easily find the music that we're referencing.
Oh, nice.
And so because Charlie was here, we talked about Soul Cat.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, wow, I didn't even know he was in the band. And then there you were.
Isn't Charlie a sweetheart?
Oh my God, he's
one
the
of
best.
One of the best people I've ever
I know.
Met.
But you're sipping on your iced tea and I keep thinking, oh my God, we have Mitchells here.
We do.
So it was funny because Jan's like, should I bring Mitchells? And I'm like, yeah, hi, please go ahead.
Oh,
so we were talking about, we're like, should we eat beforehand? I said, no, let's do
the ASMR segment. Listen to the crinkles of the paper bag.
Get it closer.
The recyclable paper bag. Oh. And then you can't hear this, but it's a turkey avocado sandwich. Delicious.
Without mayonnaise, plus mustard.
Plus mustard.
I do voices, too. I just don't break them out every now and then.
Do you like voices?
No. You know what I do? I talk to the dog in voices, and we have James Bond villain day here at the Basil House and I will talk to him in a James Bond villain voice all day.
Does that scare the dog?
No.
Oh.
He just looks at me like I'm crazy. I also sing to him occasionally full songs, like I Want You to Want Me by Cheap Trick.
Yep, great song.
And I love doing it, especially like if I'm sick and I'm amusing myself, like I'm sick in bed. I haven't gotten that sick in a while, but, and I would sing to him in this like, you know, gravelly voice. And he just looked at me like, what in the fuck are you doing? And I laugh. So then I record myself and the dog. I have videos of it. It amuses me. It's all that matters. So none of y'all will ever hear my voices, I don't think. I used to also call my dad. I did the prank call thing. We did that. We would break out the phone book. And then we would just randomly call people, right? That was fun. Fun with phone books. And then I would prank call my dad because he's a very private guy, was a very private man. So I'd call him, be like, Joe there, you know, like using a man's voice. And every time I'd get him, who's this? Oh my God.
It's bringing back memories.
Wait, that paper's good, AMSR. Ooh, yeah.
Is this good paper?
Well, it's the, what do they call that? Like deli paper?
Yeah, parchment paper.
I'll do it too. Oh shit, the pickle just fell out on my lap. Wait, is the pickle gonna make noise? That's good, you have sprouts hanging out in your mouth.
This is where you lose the majority of your fans.
I don't like it, but it's funny because occasionally I'll catch myself watching something. And I don't get it, but I get it.
There's a particular ASMR. Some people love it, and it just scares the living shit out of me.
Get closer to that mic.
It's called mukbang.
You said that earlier. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I think I'm saying it right. In certain Asian countries, very popular concept of ASMR where these people will just eat like crab legs, lobster tails, and like they're cracking it and then they're slurping as much as they possibly can.
Oh.
And it, like ASMR community, I've never really delved deep into it. It's nice to like soft, soft voice. It's very chill. Get relaxed. This one is just like the equivalent of
aggressive eating.
Oh yeah, it's like a heart.
So if you're one of those people that hate hearing someone chew, right?
This would be like a Guantanamo Bay equivalent of torture for me personally, because of just you hear so like they'll dip into a whole bowl of mayo and slurp it out.
Oh, stop it!
And oh God, ugh. They say that you know there's a place called hell, but having to hear that kind of shows that it exists.
I had a friend. I hated the way she chewed. I swear to you, I wanted to stab her every now and then. But speaking of mayo, I'm not a huge mayo fan. I think because my mother did Miracle Whip when we were kids. Now I do a vegan thing that tastes more like Miracle Whip. It's weird.
Vegan mayo is different, though. I mean, just think of it. Like, mayo is just creamed up eggs, right?
And olive oil, pretty right?
Much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's emulsified. You know, so do you like garlic aioli, like with fries and stuff like
that?
Same
thing.
That's mayo. You're eating mayo.
Right.
But to put another word on it, it's like, ooh, this is the most artisanal truffle aioli of all time. And say, nah, you just got some truffle flavored olive oil and mixed it in with some eggs and whipped it up. And there you go.
So I guess I could make it at home.
You could.
And maybe I would like it better. But you'd never catch me buying a jar of Hellman's. Or what's the one down here? Duke's?
Yeah, Duke's is a big one, I think.
Duke's mayo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm more of a mustard guy myself. I like zingy, like vinegar-based stuff.
You know, I'm afraid to chew on it on the air.
Why?
Speaking of mayo, you have it like
on my face.
You totally missed it.
Oh.
Nope.
Oh, I did. It's just I might have gotten
there's
on the
napkins
side.
Here too.
Are there
oh,
napkins?
And plates. See, I was prepared.
Who needs plates?
I know.
When we have
so,
hands.
Another reason why we decided we're gonna eat on air is to give Mitchell some props. They're down the way, right? And they're the best sandwich makers in town,
I've been going to them for over a decade now, and it's better than the last every time. You know, they moved once, maybe twice now.
You know what? Is now I have sprouts falling out of my mouth. It looks like they bought another building maybe across over there. And they're turning a lot of that into condos, I hear.
So is the way of development and gentrification.
Right, here in East Nashville. And that's, it's causing great disparity. And it's pushing people out, right? And then they can't get back into town for the jobs, you know, especially if they don't have cars or whatever. We're not a city of public transportation.
Yeah, that does not exist.
No light rail system.
Nope.
So stop coming here.
Scooters and cars. That's, you know, it's...
The scooters. Let's talk about those for a minute, okay?
Let's do that.
They were designed to be first and last mile. So it's the people going to the train for work. How did they become like such a tourist sensation? Like, isn't that the last thing you want? Or drunk people flying around a city? Because our tourist area is adjacent to or in the city.
That's true. But you can technically get a, scooter, like driving under the influence. You can get a DUI if you're drunk on a scooter.
Well, I haven't done the research, but I wonder how often that actually happens. People are cited for drunk scootering.
A lot of people drink in this town.
Or just don't drink like me.
Yeah. Yes. Don't drink like me as well. And this is, the sandwich just fell on the floor.
Oh my God. The whole half a sandwich just fell. Thank God I cleaned some before you came. Oh my God. I feel like gold just fell on the ground. What else was I going to ask you? We didn't really talk about Jan's house, except that you have this hostel and this space for musicians. And you said amenities like showers and a real bed.
Yeah.
Right? And a comfortable space. But there's also a recording space, right?
Yeah.
And a performance space.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the rehearsal space and then the performance space is actually outdoors.
It is, yeah.
On the deck.
Yeah.
Talk about that a bit.
Yeah.
While I pick up my sandwich off the floor.
I guess it kind of ties in, you know, what we were first talking about, people, you know, knowing people in the city, and the more people that you know, the more opportunities it provides. So I don't know, the house more or less it's like a glorified Airbnb for musicians that's artist centric. So yeah, touring musicians come through, just like any Airbnb. Yeah. There's shout, you have bathrooms, you have bedrooms. I can comfortably sleep up to about 12 people, with three private rooms and then a band barracks room in the TV space where, usually, the people who snore the most usually get the private bedroom. I wanted to make it into kind of a funky art house. There's a rehearsal space in the basement. There's another live room, and that space used to be the tracking room when Soulcat lived at the house, and Jeremy lived in the basement. It was nice because, like clockwork, you know, all of us could go downstairs, go track. We'd all kind of reconvene towards the end of the week, put music together, and see what ideas stuck. And kind of applying that to the band staying at the house, if they want to record or rehearse downstairs in the basement, you know, the whole concept is if they have a place to stay, they feel comfortable, and they can relax from the arduous journey that they're on, they'll perform better as a result, you know. And the takeaway is the fans get a better experience, the bands feel better, and you know, it's hard to be a touring musician. You know, touring musicians have more in common with truck drivers, flight attendants, and the journeymen, traveling nurses. Like it's the road life is hard.
Well, unless you're a country artist that has this whole, like, they have a shower truck, they have a couple of buses, and they create this little home on the road.
Sure.
They'll put down like AstroTurf and play with their kids, and they just like have amazing meals, and they create this little city within the city, right?
Right. I think that's a major exception to the rule, though. Just kind of like the amount of pro athletes that there are, how many pro musicians are at that caliber where they can afford it, or it's available to them. I feel like a lot more songwriter, country musicians, I guess that can fall into folk Americana space too. A lot of them play, you know, like VFWs. We're going and playing, you know, at small bars and restaurants and breweries and such. You know, there's the idea of the non-traditional venue too. But yeah, tying that into my house acts as a pop-up venue for touring musicians and local bands too. But it's nice when, if they have a couple days off, we could do a pop-up, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 people, however many they want, in the outdoor space. I built a deck back in 2018. And
you wouldn't know it. It's like little forest back there.
Little slice of paradise. It's definitely an unknown
space. It's amazing.
But the whole idea too is, yeah, giving the option of a performance and tying it to a charity. So a lot of times we'll work with local charities to, you know, 50% of the whatever revenue raised goes to the band, and then the rest goes to the charity of their choice. So trying to give back to the community when I can, and you know, it's great to get the bands involved, and they get to build a relationship with the city as well.
Well, and you also have partnered with media companies like Paste. Right. And so they're doing, I guess, streaming. Was it? Because I was trying to figure that out. So Brad's the host. And he has it on YouTube.
He does. Yeah. Okay. So Paste Magazine. Shout out to Josh. Thanks for putting on at the house, Josh. And then Brad and the first time the way I got affiliated with those guys, I did a show. I did one of the first performances at the Paste Studio in New York with Rayland. I think that was back in 2015.
And that's how you met these guys.
Yeah, and just stayed in touch with them. You know, and it's great to maintain relationships with people, you know, different walks of life. You never know what's going to happen or what opportunities, again, come back around. You know, 5, 6 years later, get to have Paste for the second time at my house. The first time we did almost 24 bands in 6 days. And this past one we did 21, 22, and 5. So like clockwork, but getting to have all these local artists come and see the place and, you know, in person and get the walkthrough and understand what the mission and the vision of what my space is, and partnering with people and organizations like Paste, they act as a place of discovery. I want my house to be the same exact thing, you know, a place for artists, you know, fans to discover new art or musicians, music, and discovery.
Which I certainly did. And I mentioned on a previous podcast, Maggie Rose,
mm-hmm.
and I think people are familiar already with Keb Mo, but that was really, and I feel lucky to know you because I get to have these experiences. I got invited to the house, but one reason why I was there, I also hear that you have yoga. You have yoga available at the house. Do tell. Self-promotion here.
Self-promotion for a wonderful yoga instructor, spiritual instructor. And that plays again, yeah, to the ideas of what amenities can you provide for artists so they can perform better. If they want a photographer, a videographer as well. If they want, you know, a health and wellness person such as Charlie. Charlie can come over, meet at the house, meet at the venue or wherever they want. They can go to his place. And the bands can, you know, get a little fix in right before they have to take the stage. They get, you know,
a tune up, man. Yeah, I tell everybody, I go, you come through town, you have to make an appointment with Charlie.
Yeah. And same goes for you. Like having bands, you know, in the morning, what better way to start your morning than with a nice, you know, awakening and you know, hour of yoga. You know,
we had the best coffee, and I think I already mentioned this. You put on Animals.
Did.
First, it was an album that was for plants. It was like an album from 1973 or
right.
something, and it was music for plants.
Yeah, it's called Plantasia, and that's a shout-out to my friend, Mr. Deo Braun, Chris Braun. For my birthday, didn't expect it. Just a record arrived in the mail, and it says Plantasia on it. I'm like, oh, my God, this sounds amazing.
Right?
Put it on, and one of the coolest synthesizer instrumentals ever made. And I want to think that my plants are growing better as a result of playing it on a regular basis. And I think they are.
Well, you have some impressive live plants there at the house, which also adds to the ambiance. I love plants.
Well, you think of photosynthesis, then you think of photosynthesizers or the sizes. So maybe it's a play on words there, but you
know, perhaps.
Who knows? Plants are just natural synthesizers.
Yeah. There you go. Tying it into music, always. So I've taught yoga there. We did it to Animals because you have this great vinyl collection right there to choose from. And we were just in the living room, and I could tell, even I got into it. You guys are into it. Afterwards, it's kind of this subdued, clean, bright energy in the room, just kind of chill. And I got to take that with me throughout the day. And hopefully so did you.
That was one of the best days of the week.
Right on.
I felt better. I felt
see,
right.
See, guys.
Clear-minded.
Yeah. My yoga, I don't talk much about yoga on the podcast yet. There's a few people that I have in mind to have on as guests. But my yoga is steeped in, I have lineage going back to India. It's more about the yoga philosophy. And then an added bonus is my counseling certificate. Mm. So I was able to take yoga into treatment centers where people that are healing and newly sober and suffering and sprinkle a little bit of that on them and also hold space for them when they were in crises sometimes.
Having daily, some level of a daily routine or something, you know, structure.
Structure, a lot of musicians, and consistency.
Yeah, and a lot of touring musicians, you know, don't have access to that. Most of them are not eating well, don't have the chance to exercise. You finish the show, you're, you know, driving 30 minutes outside of town.
And you and just staying, ate pizza yeah, that the venue provided.
And you're staying at a motel, hotel, and then, you know, you drive to the next venue. You do sound check, and then you have 6 hours off. What are you going to do? You're going to eat the food at the bar.
Or, grab a banana on the way out of the hotel if they have
see, that'd be
breakfast.
Yes, that's important, you know. And the bigger bands, you know, it gets easier for them because, you know, they get to drive to the next city overnight. They wake up in the next city overnight. They have the whole day to themselves to be able to go, say, to a gym, the Y or whatever. They can go to a Whole Foods or, you know, the $14 juicer, juicing spot.
No, they send the assistant tour manager to go.
Oh, yeah, and the runners from the venues, too.
That's runners funny. From the venues. And they also will come back to the bus and they'll have, like, the show meal. Mm. So they will have ordered from a delicious local restaurant and have an actual meal to go ready for them. So yeah, you get to a certain level and it does become slightly more glamorous. You know, you do get to stay in better hotels and experience the cities in which you're in because you're traveling. But unless you have a day off, you don't get to tour the cities and experience, you know, the local culture and food. And
I'm a foodie too. So getting to go on tour for an extended amount of time was, I did it for the music, but I also did it for the food.
All you got to do is have somebody who's local.
Right.
A friend who's local, who's plugged in, or you do your own research. And before you even go, have in mind where you're going to go eat, maybe.
Yeah, a lot of times I was designated as the chef of the band. Or it's like, where do we go? Go do your research.
The foodie of the band.
Yeah.
So every band should have a foodie.
Yeah. Donnie is a great foodie too. He had some good spots on the road.
Yeah. He keeps talking about that redheaded stranger over here.
And yeah,
yeah. I haven't checked that out yet.
Best Hatch chili burger in town.
Oh, see, there you go. I'm able to buy Hatch chili at Trader Joe's. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah. It's really good. It comes in a jar. Yeah.
We should grow some Hatch chilies this year.
Yeah. You know, my neighbors next door, they invited me over to watch Nashville Soccer Club mm-hmm. play the other day. And they do the screen in the backyard. They'll do movies. They invited me over there. And I didn't expect to eat. I actually had something on the stove ready to go. And I go over there, watch the game. And then they're like, shishito peppers? And I was like, what? And they were the best ones I've ever had. And they go, yeah, they're right there in the garden. And they just exploded. They like this. Peppers like this climate, like this soil. So that's good to know because I didn't do any peppers this year, but shishito peppers, and they just like lightly cooked them and then just salt and pepper and some oil. It was like, you don't need to overdo them like they do in the restaurants. So good.
Oddly enough, a couple, Johnny from Soul Cat now in Okie Dokie.
What's Okie Dokie?
Okie Dokie is a wonderful band, local band here in Nashville.
Oh, I did not know this.
And a lot of the members of that band were of Soul Cat.
Oh, so, okay.
Old family. And again, the lineage, the band tree extends. But they, Johnny's been growing peppers for years too. And he started, I believe it's Community Heat, which is a wonderful local hot sauce. And he's doing other random stuff too. I think he's making, what is it? Johnny, are you making sauces? Let us know.
Yeah, call into the show. Hold on. Caller? I have this little board here. It's so funny. I was just like, listen, my setup is kind of, what is the word I'm looking for? Hmm. Archaic? Amateur? What is the word I'm looking for? There's a word. It'll come to me tonight. Novice. But it's just the board. I mean, I have capabilities to have people call in. There's like two tracks here I could use for people to call in. So as I get more evolved here, we might be able to do that.
We definitely should.
You could call Johnny, right?
It's like...
do that more ASM, because that's... The butcher paper, that's what it's called. The deli paper.
I wish you could taste this. It's delicious.
Oh, yeah. Normally only eat half the sandwich, but the second that you leave here, I'm wolfing down the rest.
It's totally fine.
So I initially, when I started doing the podcast, I had some questions in mind because this is unrehearsed. However...
Do you think of questions pertaining to the individual that you're interviewing?
No. No, I mean, of course I wanted to ask you about Jan's house because I think it's an important place here in Nashville that people need to know about because it's so awesome.
Well, any band that's listening to this, if you guys need a place to stay when you come through Nashville, I would love to host you.
There you
go.
And
give you an experience of Nashville that hopefully you can take with you on the road.
Yeah, and tell your friends. It's been a minute since I asked questions. What are your go-to books or any that were remarkable and made an impression on you at some point in your reading history?
I never really read too many I didn't read a lot of autobiographies. I need to start reading more of those. I've always was fascinated and obsessed with science fiction as a kid. So like Ray Bradbury and Asimov and Something Wicked This Way Comes I remember having to read Martian Chronicles as a kid, and it's just the fascination of what is beyond our planet, you know? And
Stranger in a Strange Land, Heinlein. Yeah. That was one of them for me.
Yeah, and Illustrated Man, that was a really good one, you know, mini stories pertaining to that, and like The Man with the Tattoos, each story was different. And, I don't know, I really haven't read as much as I should. I played more chess than anything, especially on tour. That was something that would bide my time. And I'm more of a mathematical, analytical person, an objective aspect than a reader, if you will. I know I like experience more. I get into that light. People, talking to people about their stories.
Right.
You know, the oral tradition or the, you know, autobiography on a first base account.
Well, I think our phones and social media and the ability to text have taken away the art of conversation.
I think so, too. And being able to tell a good story.
Well, I'm trying to bring that back here. That's what I'm trying to do for you guys.
It's my first interview in a long time, so I'm honored for you to have me on here. But break the ice and keep it candid. You know?
Yeah, no, you keep coming up, and I've been by the house to teach yoga and take in the performance experience at Jan's house. And it's all been so great. And we run into each other less and less because of COVID times, right? I'm choosy with where I go indoors. But it's so funny that you mentioned the end earlier because I'm going tonight to the end to see the Districts.
Oh, fantastic. Philly band all the way.
Yeah. And they put on a spectacular live show.
They do.
I mean, they kick ass. They're definitely ones that they leave it all out there.
Do you know the Toy Soldiers? Have you heard of them?
No.
So I think they're in the same crew. And a friend that used to live with me, great impression to do. What's up, guys? My name's Jordan Hall. He's one of my favorite songwriters of all time. They're a great band.
Yeah.
They kick ass.
They're managed by my friend Griff. And I have this idea that I'm going to have Griff on the show and maybe the guys at Audio Tree.
Ooh.
Which I realized that you, as part of Soul Cat, you guys did an Audio Tree session.
Twice.
See?
Twice is nice. Shout out to Lauren as well and McCluskey and the whole Audio Tree fam.
So you met Jeff McCluskey.
Yes.
Okay, and I used to work for Jeff.
And there's a lot of the guys who worked there.
Rick Fritz.
And yep, keep going. You know all, it sounds like you know them all.
Well, no, I know Rick because him and I, he was the lead engineer at a studio that I managed years ago in Chicago, River North. And Jeff McCluskey, a few years after that, I went and worked in his office in new business and consulting. Of course, I probably fucked that up. And then Griff will tell the story. He's so gracious. He'll be like, I stole her from Jeff McCluskey. Like, I think I kind of fell out of Jeff McCluskey and into working for the Grammys locally in Chicago. So, yeah, I know. And I know that space in that building.
Yeah.
So,
and,
yeah.
And it's important to have people like that and institutions that audio, like Audio Tree has been around for a long while and the incubator bands, finding, you know, discovering the next artist and willing to take a chance and give them the time of day to be able to get a really great recording, get some good video and have a conversation. And you know, from like anthropological, like you're recording history in a way.
Right.
And maintaining, preserving that. And it's like you get to go back and that's where the band was then and look where they become and they'll still go do Audio Trees. You know, they pay it
but
forward.
But see, Audio Tree, it's the quality is... Mm-hmm. Exceptional. The video that comes with that is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So I actually recorded the episode with Ernie C at the studio there on Honoré. So I got to have my own Audio Tree experience.
Must have been the best sounding one yeah, that's nice.
It was so much fun. I mean, it was like my best friend and an old friend. And the only thing is we didn't get video. And Kyle, my engineer, keeps going like, you need to get some video, like when you record Jan, like take pictures of each other or whatever. I'm like, no, because I wish like my Instagram was really slick or something. Oh God, he's taking a photo. That's the other thing. I hate taking pictures. Here, this is a good one. There you go.
That's why it's a video.
Oh my God. I did some modeling when I was younger and I could never get comfortable in front of the camera ever. I think it's an anxiety thing. I don't know.
Cameras are weird. Yeah, same. I don't
like smile. You're like, yeah, fuck you. Like I can smile. Like take a candid, right? Take candid photos all you want, but don't take photos of me.
And you can learn a lot about people too, like social media wise. You know, if you look at somebody's account, are they looking outward or are they looking inward? You know, the people who it's just dozens upon dozens of photos of them not really looking out or taking, you know, trying to capture something in the moment, you know, or show or, you know, photos with friends and such. It's usually very, I don't know, is it narcissistic or kind of?
Well, yeah, every time I am narcissistic or I post something that's racy, man, my phone blows up. It's incredible. Like, leave me alone. Go look at some other people's pages that are posting photos of themselves every day, every time, probably twice a day. Give me a break.
Damn right.
I'm yelling at them. Anyway, let's see the other questions. Well, if you had songs that were your anthems, so for example, something that carried you through the lockdown or your go-to karaoke song. I'll never reveal what my go-to karaoke song is. Oh, they're closing. Are they closing?
Friends.
They're closing Friends.
Friends.
They're when?
They're hopefully moving. I'm assuming they're moving.
But when does that space close?
I think it ends either tomorrow, the 30th or the 31st. I think Halloween.
I almost feel like I need to go over there and sing my song.
We should do an interview there. Bring this. And let's get some interviews, meet some other local Nashville music mayors.
Right?
And yeah, sing your song, debut it for one last time.
I love it. Even the young people love it. So you'll enjoy it.
I appreciate that.
It's a timeless classic. It's a classic song that gets people going.
I'm an old soul. I can.
I know.
I'd like to
think
so. I know.
I just like to use the phrase young people because then it makes me sound old. Oh my God. I just thought of something. Last night, a friend and I were texting and I said, does anyone use the phrase jump your bones anymore? And then my question was like, oh my God, do you even know what I'm talking about? Because you're from the South. And he was like, of course I do. We totally use that in high school. But there's people born after a certain year that don't know what I'm saying. Do you know what I'm saying?
There's some phrase, maybe jump your bones, you know.
You can figure it out, but yeah. You never used it.
Never really used it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was so funny. So I did do a little poll on Twitter this morning because I want to see what people's reaction is to this phrase. I did do that in rehab. We would do polls because you got to amuse yourself somehow, right?
Sure.
And my friend Nicole and I, she was a young person, and I couldn't believe that she didn't know what I was talking about. So we went around and individually asked people and kind of took our poll of, and we weren't allowed to talk to the men, believe it or not. I don't know how we got their input, but we did. And because I did actually behave. But yeah, it turns out that it's a generational thing.
If you were to say, like, I want to jump your bones. Is that how it would be used?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I try to be cute. Like, I'll text someone out of the blue and be like, hey, you want to make out?
Yeah.
There's a guy that I want to send that to, but I'm a little bit on the fence. I might do it anyway just to amuse myself.
The worst thing they can say is no.
Yeah, and he's not pulling the trigger.
You got to put it out there. Sometimes you got to take the initiative.
Well, but see, I read people because of my family dysfunction. One of my superpowers is I read the room, I read people. And so I've already come up with all this, you know, in my head. So I don't know if it's true or not. I'm like, okay, maybe he's scared. Maybe he knows how old I am now.
Maybe he's thinking the same thing that you are, though. Maybe he's waiting for you. Or
no, because it's like, let's hang out. And I don't, well, here's the thing. If he's slightly younger than I am, I know some of that traditional role playing is out the window. So it's like, is he waiting for me to ask him out? Or I don't think so. He seems a little old school, but yeah, it's so weird. Dating in general, just, you know, it's, and I'm finding that here, I'm doing like ASMR. I'm trying to like put the plate down quietly. Maybe you should put the plate on each other in the microphone for us. I don't even know. I'm like, ASMR. Is that what it is? Yeah.
The ASMR of.
Here we go.
Listen to the plates rotating on each other.
The funny thing is, those plates, if my cousins are listening, they might even remember the sound because those were my grandparents' everyday dishes. When you ate at grandma and grandpa's, those are the ones. I love them.
That's the OG.
Aesthetically,
OG
they're the
ASMR.
Best. I don't know. We got off track there, didn't we?
Anthems, songs.
Of karaoke.
The past.
So yeah, your anthems.
Anthems. Oh, that's like when people say, "What are your favorite songs?" That's hard.
No, that's why I almost didn't ask this question.
Totally,
but that's
fine.
A different question. But I'm not asking that.
But all right. So like, thinking about different eras, like growing up, I grew up in L.A., a lot of punk music, a lot of, my dad played a bunch of old, you know, rock stuff. So I don't know, anthems, As the Eternal Cowboy was like my middle school, like eighth grade, Against Me, great band, love them. One of the coolest live shows I've ever seen. Anthems, man, there's some, I don't know, I'm a Floyd freak. I love Floyd. Floyd, I mean, Dark Side of the Moon as an album anthem, as cliche as it sounds, was a great anthem. That's a good thing. I remember getting my club card when I turned 18 years old, going to Dr. Kush on Venice Beach and being able to blast, Black Star was amazing. I love old school, like, you know, not necessarily old school hip hop, but I mean, as a duo, Black Star, Mos Def, man, so tight.
Well,
his song Hip Hop, that's an anthem for me.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great track.
That 90s hip hop, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kool Moe Dee, Biz Markie. Hey, you can't beat that stuff. You got what I need. It's good stuff. you know, being right on the spot too, trying to think of anthems. You listen and take in so much music. I don't know. It's like what day, like so if it's a rainy day outside, I might put on Tom Waits or some jazz or,
right.
You know, if I'm feeling angry, I'll put on some metal or some hardcore.
And I think this question was born of me being on lockdown by myself with the dog in the living room and then having that be my own personal performance space.
Sure.
Right. And dancing around the living room and thinking about what songs did it for me. Mm. Right. I know Van Halen, the original Van Halen one, that was on high rotation.
High kicks and all.
Oh my God, right? Oh my God. Yeah, for real. did you see? I got air. I got air. People are like, did you have a trampoline in there? I'm like, no. I swear to God, that was me just jumping around the living room to the music. And it was only because I was wearing these pants. They just remind you of David Lee Roth or even the Frankenstrat. And I was wearing those pants that day. My friend Deb was like, that's very Van Halen of you. That's very David Lee Roth. I said, oh, yeah? You want to see David Lee Roth? And so we're both in lockdown, right? And so it was like Saturday night, I videoed myself jumping around the living room and then posted it for her amusement. And yeah, I'm glad it didn't go viral. It's a little embarrassing.
You could be the next TikTok star.
Oh my God, I don't even have a TikTok. I refuse. Enough. Stop with the social media. Like, just stop.
I think we'll see an era without social media, or it'll be a niche thing where it's like catering to a very select group, like musicians or to people who love film and focusing on that.
I don't know, man. With Zuckerberg launching the Meta, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And like he's trying to do this, like, I'm going to create this virtual universe. I'm like, yeah, because we need to be crazier.
The Matrix can be a real thing if we want it to be.
Right. I mean, we're already on the verge of insanity.
What if that sandwich that we just ate wasn't real?
Real because I have the other half right here. I'm ready to go to town on. Are you kidding me? It's the best. Let's see. Oh, this is a good question.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm pissed. I don't think I asked Ernie this. I need to do a part two with Ernie just to ask this alone. What is the thing that you would tell your 18-year-old self?
Take a year off after high school and go and get lost for a little bit. I kind of burnt out and went to Belmont. Belmont was okay. I mean, I made a lot of great friends. Some of the teachers were fantastic, but man, what do I tell myself? Take more risks. You know, don't wait so long to put out the music that you wrote. And I'm kind of agreeing with it even to this day. It's been years since I put music out. And I have music. There's music there. It's just shelved.
Well, you told me you even have like podcast
stories to put out. Yeah, I have dozens of interviews with bands. Kind of the concept. So you want to be a tour musician. It's like, what's the craziest, what's the wildest, the darkest, and the most real stories that, you know, bands have to endure, you know, and in a way, not glamorizing it, but saying, you know, why it's great to be a tour musician, why it's great to be an artist, you know, just in and of itself, but also the downsides and the dark things, you know, and having to deal with that. And,
well, that's the beauty of being the friend of, is you get to go join the tour date.
Right.
You get to participate in all of that, and then you get to leave.
Right. You don't have to have the repercussions or the PTSD of
No. You get the backstage experience. You get to hang out. You get to see a great show. You even get to eat the pizza and partake in whatever debauchery goes on. And at this point in my life, it's not all debauchery, but I am a fly on the wall,
sure.
Right? And, you know, it can still get a little crazy.
It's great to have friends. You know, when you go to different cities or you bring a friend on tour, there's a sense of like a reality check.
And oh,
there's
yeah.
a way to be grounded. It's like, you know, something's up. You can always, it's like, oh, my friend's here. Like it just makes you feel much more at ease.
Well, and it's funny. I spoke about it on the very first, was it the introduction or the Ask Me Anything? The banana bread. I had a friend who would ask me to bring banana bread backstage. I was like, yeah, homemade banana bread. I mean, how much more domestic and normal can you get?
It makes them feel at home though, right?
Absolutely. When you're eating stuff on the road out of restaurants all the time or, yeah.
Bands that just want a home-cooked meal from time to time.
I want a home-cooked meal from time to time. I am so sick of cooking for myself. Are you kidding me?
I'll cook for you.
Okay.
We'll make a trade.
I've seen your kitchen and it's a good one, right?
I like to cook.
All right.
Cooking's something that kept me grounded. You know, as music is as much as music has as well. There's something, you know, musicians, any art, you know, if you're an artist, that is your job. You know, you're paid to do that it's not just a lifestyle, but it is your way of surviving. That is your life, you know, to have another hobby or an outlet. Yeah, a form of expression or just something to, you know, yeah, allow yourself to just get away for a little bit. the cooking aspect. It's very grounded, you know? There's a set rules of, you know, how to cook something, or you just get to experiment. You could be just as creative in the kitchen as you can in the studio.
I'm good.
See what you whip up, you
I'm
know?
Good about eating something in a restaurant and coming home and making that and mm-hmm. trying to replicate it as best I can. It is hard to do, too, when you're not cooking for other people. You kind of get out of practice of that sort of thing. And I haven't been eating out as much. Like, I'm not really sitting down in restaurants and eating. And that's okay. It's okay. That'll come back, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I, 3 meals a day cooking for yourself. It's, you get so sick of it. You just get sick of it. And
but if you want to cook, you know, I loved having bands come and stay at the house, or even when I got off a tour, I love cooking. I would invite friends. I live on the west side of Nashville for anyone who doesn't know where, you know, west versus east Nashville. It's a 15-minute drive. But my friends, all who lived on the east side at the time, mostly artists, and be like, come over to the house. I'll cook for you. You can crash at the house if you want. We can have a bonfire. We'll make a night of it. And they're just like, you live too far away.
It's no.
Like 15
okay,
minutes.
Okay, that's the LA attitude, because I had friends in Santa Monica when I was in the Valley that I stopped hanging out with because it was, come to me.
Right.
Come to me. And I was like, wait a minute. Let's meet halfway or come to me.
Yeah.
And they were like, can't do it. So, and I don't mind, because being from Chicago, you would travel to see your friends. You would drive across town an hour to go hang out. And no problem. At least that's how I was. And I know here across town, it takes me 18 minutes to get to your place. So all those people on the east side, they're telling you no.
They're lazy.
Forget them.
Yeah.
I'll come.
Screw all of you. Which is basically 99% of my friend group that all live over in Eastside or in Madison. Now it is closer to a 25, 30-minute drive.
That's but okay.
Even though it's a podcast, you know, and you make a day of it. You know, you come over, you hang out. And same thing, I come to Eastside a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to drive out for my friends.
Should be reciprocated. And that's about keeping... Oh, it was so funny. I saw someone post something. Apparently, you had a TikTok star who just moved into a complex from Philly. And then you had an on-air personality in Chicago on one of the stations, and they met. And I guess she's new to town, and she was talking to her new neighbor. And she was like, oh, it's so nice to meet someone. I just moved here kind of thing. And then he went on the air, and he was talking about how, I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, that's not what this is here. Like, I'm not here to talk to you kind of thing. And he kind of called her out on air. And then she caught wind of it, right?
Mm.
And then you see her reaction to it all, because it could potentially be really embarrassing or hurtful to her. So I commented, I got a little feisty. I was like, he said, it's this, the station said, is this guy being a jerk? I mean, it's not like she's invading his personal space. It didn't sound. She was just,
she was thirsting
for community or connection. And I just said, yeah, it's not jerk. We use another word in Chicago for that. And honey, if you want someone to show you around, I'm like, call me. Sanjay Gupta has this documentary about how the life expectancy here in the United States is lowering because there's a lack of community and connection and more deaths of despair, which it's heart attacks, overdoses. Why can't I say that word?
Overdosing?
I don't want to say that word. God, I've dealt with it enough. Heart attacks, overdoses. Say
overdoses.
I can't. Why
doses?
Can't I say that?
Overdoses.
Heart attacks, overdoses, and suicides.
That's awful.
Right. They call them deaths of despair, and they're on the rise. And this is going back pre-pandemic. I can't even imagine now. But that's one of the things that they showed, that there was like lower heart attack rates or heart disease in areas where there was community.
Sure. You know, in recent years, a lot of people, you know, the idea of liking a photo or commenting on something justifies or is equivalent to, you know, actually having a conversation with them or catching up with them.
Trust me, I know this. Because also we eulogize people on social media, right? It's, you used to have to look at the obituaries or get a phone call when someone died.
Right.
And so then, I mean, it's customary now, unfortunately, you post something and, you know, how many people like the post that my father died?
Right.
And how many people
my condolences as a comment. And
right.
That's the extent
and
of
they
that.
Don't pick up the phone. And what right. you actually need is people to hold space for you.
Right.
You know, even yeah. if it's just sitting quietly next to you, but
no
it makes
doubt.
People uncomfortable. So I think I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
The texting and the social media has created this, it's allowed for us to stay comfortable and not get uncomfortable in holding space for other people or reaching out for that connection. Yeah, but that makes me laugh because I'm like, oh yeah, do I go out my comfort zone and ask that dude what he's doing this weekend?
When I call friends in LA, they're like, why are you calling me? You can just text me.
Oh God, right? So yeah, well, I'm glad that you came and this was a great afternoon and thank you so much for bringing Mitchell's. That was awesome. And hopefully our ASMR freaks are satiated.
I hope so too.
Right.
We can have a round two sometime soon.
Right, we will.
Maybe we'll get a different, just different types of rest, different food from different places.
Right. And we'll take, I'm trying to take unrehearsed out on the road. So we did Chicago, which that makes total sense, right? Since that's my city. And maybe I'll take unrehearsed to the west side.
Come out west.
Or the new Franz location.
Ooh.
That would be funny.
Oh, yeah.
That would be experimental.
That'd be very.
We can invite our musician friends and we'll do karaoke and we'll shoot the breeze.
I'm all for it.
Right on. Well, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. And you guys need to check out Jan's house online. And if you haven't already, please go ahead and follow and like all that fun stuff. Rate unrehearsed. And I'm going to end it the way I always do. You guys out there, take care of one another. And all that you hate, all you distrust, all you say, and all that you give, and all that you deal, and all that you buy, big, borrow, or steal, and all you create, and all you destroy, and all that say, and all that you eat, and everyone you meet, and all that you slight, and everyone you fight, and all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's